Hey, what's good? My name is Britta B, and you're listening to The D Word. You love poetry, music, books, photography, or anything else that doesn't seem related to dance? Every 2 weeks, we interview someone phenomenal who works in these fields and is directly or indirectly inspired by dance, but they aren't dancers themselves. We want to know, how is the world actually affected by dance? This week, we have Kyle Miller calling in. Kyle is a graduate of the Randolph Academy for the Performing Arts and has worked as an actor and continues to support arts-based philanthropy. Kyle's work includes supporting some of Canada's most celebrated arts organizations, such as Canadian Stage, the Shaw Festival, the Royal Manitoba Theatre Centre, Soul Pepper, and Toffle Music. As part of the development team at Rainbow Railroad, he aligned mission-focused work with years of LGBTQI activism through his work as drag artist Vanity à la Mode. He can be found as a regular guest at Drag Brunch at Glad Day Bookshop. And currently, Kyle continues human rights advocacy with Jayu, a Canadian nonprofit sharing human rights stories through the art. Kyle, it's a huge pleasure to have you on the show today. How are you doing?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm very good. It's great to hear and even see you on the Zoom call right now.
I can't not smile when I'm looking at you.
Ah, thank you. Well, bright wise, my friend. From what I know about you, social justice is really at the heart of what you do for a living. Can you talk to me a bit about the community engagement work you do and how you got started?
Yeah, absolutely. So I, after college, I started working in philanthropy as like a way to pay the bills, and sort of quickly realized that I kind of had a knack for engaging with people and inspiring others to kind of get behind different projects. And so for the majority of my career, I was working in the arts. So I was doing things like individual giving at Canadian Stage and supporting the Manitoba Theatre Centre and Soul Pepper and lots of different arts organizations, because I went to college for that. So I kind of felt really engaged that way. About 4 years ago, I lost my aunt to cancer. And it sort of threw me for a loop in a way that made me kind of reflect on my own life and my own sort of legacy and what I was kind of leaving to the world. And I think that's what really moved me into a more cause-based fundraising and looking for organizations that I could work alongside that were having more of an impact. And not to say that the arts don't have an impact. And I think, you know, we'll probably talk about my work at Jayu and sort of how the arts can do that. But I was really looking for something that, you know, at the end of life, not to, you know, jump in deep right out of the gate, but I was looking for somewhere that I could have an impact that felt like I was sort of leaving the world in a better place. And that's what took me to Rainbow Railroad. So for the last several years, I had been working with Rainbow Railroad, that provides emergency travel support to persecuted LGBTQI individuals. And that seemed to really tie into social justice work that I was doing with the LGBT community in Niagara, where I'm from. I'm a drag performer. I moonlight as Vanity à la Mode in drag. And so I had used that art form to bring awareness to the LGBT community where I'm from. And so the work at Rainbow Railroad was incredibly impactful. I'm really, really proud of what we were able to accomplish while I was there. And then most recently, I moved to Jayu, an organization that you're obviously familiar with. And that's a Toronto nonprofit that tells human rights stories through the arts. And so not only do I get to work with some really remarkable individuals that I look up to and that really inspire me, but it's been a way to sort of meld the two together and sort of bring back that love for art that I have and that that thing that really sort of that I engage with and that I resonate with in the art world. And then also feeling as though I can still see the impact on the community. I essentially, do outreach to the community, do fundraising for the organization, looking at annual giving and just sort of looking at how we can engage people who also believe in the work that Jayu is doing and raise the needed funds, because that's how we get to do the programming that we do.
Mm-hmm. So you do a lot. And a lot of times when people say, wow, you do so much, it means like many things maybe in one field or in one realm of one realm of like a vision or a mission. But you're talking about community, you're talking about advocacy, you're talking about philanthropy. Like your roles have taken on many different shapes, I feel, as you've just gotten more into the professional world, growing up and getting real jobs, quote unquote. But I want to talk to you a little bit, zone in on this thing you just said about making an impact and having a legacy. When you were younger, let's go back to young Kyle. Had you any vision or dream about what you wanted to do when you had gotten older in terms of what your future legacy might be? You know, legacy, we often think about something that we leave behind. But if you were to go back to young Kyle, is there anything that you maybe had a premonition of, any sort of calling that you felt you had?
Oh, that is good. I love that question. I think that when it comes to like what I kind of went to school for and going, I went to the Randolph Academy. And so I studied musical theater. And I think that part of that was really because I was an outgoing kid. They put me in art and in performance because, you know, they probably didn't know how to like diagnose ADHD in the 80s and the 90s. And they were like, yeah, that guy's loud, put him in theater. And so I think that's kind of why I headed in that direction. Was like, I am a very outgoing person. I am a very sort of theatrical person. And so there's a performance kind of to almost like to my personality. But I think that I knew, like, for as, you know, when people say like, as long as I can remember, yes. Like for as long as I can remember, I always knew that there was a part of me that said, like, I need to help like others who don't have what I have. Like, I need to advocate for accessibility. I wanted everyone to have the same, like, it's hard to explain, not the same as me, but I didn't want other people to not have and like need for things, right? And so I think that's what kind of drove me to philanthropy and drove me to, especially now. And I think when you're growing up, you're kind of like, when you said legacy and you, something that you leave behind, I almost think that legacy is something that you work through.
Mm.
Like you kind of work through it, because if, like when you were saying, it's all sort of like, and then this, and it sort of all intrinsically ties together. I almost think of it as like, I am discovering, I am revealing myself through my work, and sort of where you find sort of where you fit. And so like my work with Pride Niagara is one aspect. My drag is sort of like where the artistic thing goes, but I've been able to use that over here. You know, my advocacy for LGBTQI people, my lived experience as a queer person has been able to like drove me to Rainbow Railroad, right? You know, my tie or my desire to help equity seeking youth sort of drew me, made me resonate with Jayu. But all of those things, all of those aspects of my life, I always want them to be a reflection of me, right? Yeah. And that idea that it's like, it's actually, it's not like, oh, I need this job to like go and work and live. Like money comes and goes. Like we'll make sure that this Excel spreadsheet works. But if I'm not out there like feeling good about how I am impacting others and like how I am leaving a mark on other people, right? I think that's, you know, that's really important to me. And so I think that that's something that I've always carried with me, is that idea of like, how are you having an impact? What are you impacting? Are you negatively impacting things? That kind of thing. And so that, I think that's what drives me to sort of lead a life of service, if that makes any sense.
100%. I think it's really profound. And I actually really want to write it down. You're talking and I have to be quiet because this is a podcast and any sudden movements, but I'm snapping in spirit my fingers. You said, I think of legacy as something I reveal myself through. That gets all the glitters from my heartbeat. So thank you for saying that. And it sounds like also that there is a great element of generosity to your work and to your personality even. And I often think even as vulnerability, as generosity, as this gift you are giving to people, and you decide how much vulnerability you want to share with others. Is there anyone in your life that was sort of an example or a role model or an idol even that demonstrated this idea of generosity for you?
Oh, that's a really good one. I mean, as you were asking the question, I was kind of thinking about how thankful I've been for the people in my life and sort of for those people who have done that for me. I mean, I was raised by like two, you know, very Catholic parents, mm-hmm. And sort of, you know, was going to church every Sunday and sort of, you know, kind of, you know, being taught those very sort of traditional values, which I think are really sort of brilliant in a way, because they do talk about service and talk about helping others. But I had a religion teacher named Mr. Saravelli in grade 9 at Dennis Morris High School. Linda Evangelista went there. And he, at the beginning of religion class, the first day of grade 9, he said, "What is religion?" And at that point, I had been really kind of struggling with religion, especially as a queer person, and sort of understanding where I fit in and not knowing why all these people were talking so negatively about something that I knew I was at that point, sort of in my life. And he said, "What is religion?" And we worked through sort of what people thought religion was. And we tried to kind of figure out and get out of the theology of it and really move it and make it an actionable thing. And we got to the discovery at the end of the class that religion was helping those who most need it. Like to put yourself in action. And I think that's where it really sort of changed for me, because it's not really about, like, it's almost like a put your money where your mouth is for me. Like for him, he was a man who lived, like who walked the walk. He was a man who really, you know, would say things, but he would do the things that he said. And so I think that's really, he's someone who has sort of stayed with me and kind of like sort of reminded me in ways to sort of keep the action about it, keep the actual doing of it. And I think it's interesting when you say vulnerability, because I was talking to somebody recently about vulnerability, because somebody said like, "Wow, you're really open. Like you're super, like you are just about your vulnerability. You are just about," and maybe it's like, maybe I'm like listening to Brené Brown too much or something. But I really truly believe that vulnerability is the key to like kinship and to relationship and to friendship and to the human experience that we are experiencing. I feel as though when you can share your fears, when you can say, "I'm sad," when you can say, "I'm worried about something," or "That didn't make me feel okay," or any of that, is really when you can like relate like at the base of human existence. And so I think that vulnerability, I used to think like, "Oh, you're too sensitive. Like you're too this, you're too that." Yeah. And I was like, no, like this is what you got. So work with it, right? And I think it's also sometimes why I'm a little bit, I am outgoing and I am like that, because I know that like there's a lot of people who don't live with that type of personality. They don't have that lived experience. People who live with anxiety, who live with all of those things, not saying that I don't, but I think that like when we can live more out loud, when we can live more authentically, it hopefully gives permission to those who can't, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's a lot I want to pick up on there. Just to bounce off your thoughts on vulnerability, to be like, I'm working it out in terms of whatever I might be going through, and to say that out loud, it gives you and also the people supporting you so much power to just be able to say, I'm working it out, I'm working through this challenge, or I'm working through this experience. And then also with the role model that you shared, sounds too like you were shown so much integrity about following through on the things that you said you'd do or the things that you said you lived up to. So that's really poignant and really important to have as a young person. Turn to your work as a drag artist, as Vanity a la Mode. Yes. Drag has such a history of activism. What does drag help you to do in terms of your social justice, relationships, and goals? Is there anything that as a drag artist you feel like, I mean, you talked a lot about like showing up for people and being able to give permission for people to be themselves, do you feel like you're able to really personify that permission giving even more so through the expression of doing drag art?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that drag art also like really like on a personal level helped me to love myself even more for sort of like breaking out of this idea of gender and this idea of sort of like having to be this masculine man. Because for so long when you're younger and you're queer and you, once you know you're queer, you don't come out right away, right? You know you're queer and then you have to like live and then be like, oh, okay, now I'm going to come out. And so a lot of it is like figuring out what was just like heteronormative survival mode and like who you actually are. So I think drag sort of like really like ripped me out of that place of trying to like be accepted and be like what people expected me to be, as opposed to like authentically being who I am. And I think that like drag is like the ultimate visibility. It's sort of, it's almost like I always see drag as sort of like, you called us sissies, you called us women, and first of all, you called us women and you thought that calling somebody a woman was an insult. Like, let's take that, like, that's a whole other can of worms, because calling a woman is as an insult is just like misogyny at its best. And so I feel like when you're like, well, you think we're women, right? And I'm talking very traditional drag sense of like a male presenting person dressing as a woman, which is only one facet of drag. But I almost feel like it is the ultimate, like, you don't, yeah, like, you think it's an insult and watch us do it, right? Like, I love, like, I had a drag gig last night and I looked like a woman and I was, like, done to the nines and I had my nails on and I had that whole thing going. So for me, drag is, like, it's as much about that outward presentation and like what you're doing for your community as it is like, it's a little bit selfish because I just love it. I just look fantastic. I have such a great time in drag.
And having that inner power be really present. And you can have inner power in many different areas of your ongoings throughout the day to day. But I think to be able to create the space where you're able to take up all the space with your inner power and have a spotlight, you know, as a performer myself, it's something that doesn't come out. It's like kind of like in an emergency, there's something that kicks in. You get this superpower strength when there's an emergency and you need to act quickly. And I relate that so much to performance where, okay, I got this 3 minutes of being on stage and I'm going to shine TFAF, yeah, all the F's out.
Yeah, absolutely. I always, if I'm a little bit like nervous or whatever, like I do two things. One, if I'm like the side of the stage and I'm a little bit nervous, I tell myself, you're in your bedroom. You're in your bedroom. You're living your best life. You are in your bedroom. Give them bedroom. Right? Like give them shower, like give them wherever you feel safe to just like do your like finger wagging, whatever kind of thing. And then I also say, in the scope of the universe, nothing ever really happens.
Ah.
So we are two people on a podcast. Well, we're four people on a podcast. Shout out to the behind the scenes. we're four people in the country of 30 million, in the world of like 8 billion, in the galaxy of blah, blah, blah. And so in the scope of the universe, just get up there and have fun because it don't even matter.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love it. Yeah. Give them bedroom, give them shower, give them in the elevator alone, in the stairwell, all those places where you are magnanimous.
Give them that video, that online viral video of the girl at the bus stop. Give them that. Give them nobody's watching. Give them that. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Compared to your formal dance training at Randolph Academy for the Performing Arts, yes, quote unquote formal. It's actually in quotes on my notes here too, so that's funny. Does that training influence your drag at all?
Oh, absolutely. I think drag is almost like me making sure that I got my money's worth. Like, right? Like, I went to theater school. I am not a working actor, right? I sort of took a sideline to do something that I was also passionate about. And so I was like, but you better believe that my triple ball change, Shantae, Shantae, kickball change is going to come out and sort of like make an appearance, right? And I think that's too, like, I didn't go to school because people said, oh, you're loud, you should be in theater. I did love theater. It was a passion of mine. And so I always think of like, that's my outlet. Like, that's my, like, putting this drag persona on makes you like the costume designer, the makeup artist, the choreographer, the, you know, song select curator, or whatever that is, kind of thing. And so, yeah, so I think that it definitely informs my drag for sure. I don't think that I would have as much rhythm or that kind of thing when I'm in drag if I hadn't gone to school. So yeah, absolutely, Randolph informs my drag.
How would you describe the relationship between dance and drag?
Oh, I mean, I think that it's definitely sort of an integral part of drag, right? Because, I mean, for anyone listening that doesn't know, a drag queen is someone dressed in like hyper feminine attire and they're lip syncing to their favorite Mariah Carey jam. And they're just like giving you daydreaming, day loving, or whatever that one is, you know, on the stage, and they're giving you the fantasy. And so I think, you know, for sure, like depending on the song, depending on what you're trying to convey. I like to think that I do a really good job of looking like a person who can move, who you might mistakenly call a dancer.
Ah.
Right? Like, I don't know if I would call myself a dancer, but if I was, like, I've been in, you know, pageants, I've competed in contests where they're like, okay, you're going to learn this opening number. And like, to your other question, it definitely relates to back to Randolph, because Randolph, you learned how you can pick up a number quickly and how to get it into your body. And so I pick up choreography pretty well. I can keep up with, you know, with the Joneses on that. And so, but I wouldn't consider myself a dancer. I consider myself like a drag queen that moves.
Word. Yeah. And I like how you can feel so complimented or feel so flattered when someone's like, oh, you look like a dancer. Right?
Hey, and then like, here's a coupon for the optometrist. Need to get your eyes checked.
It's like, I always say I have black girl rhythm, but white girl dance moves. So, in fact, I don't even say it. Glad tells me this. My husband tells me this. But it's funny. How has drag changed your relationship to dance or your perception of dance? Because as you're saying at Randolph, at school, when you're training, you're learning a lot of the method, maybe. But for me, I imagine as with stage work and your ability to double your energy and make it as big as possible in drag, a lot of it is also paying attention to the moment and being able to improvise with the moment. So how does your training in picking up the choreography, that stuff, work in the world of drag?
Oh, I mean, I like to think that I've always thought of myself as someone with good rhythm. Like, I'm a wedding dancer. Like, I can really just put it down on the dance floor. But it got me kind of thinking that it's different in drag because, like, those moments that you're talking about, like, in drag, I think I have, from Randolph, I have an understanding of, like, where things fit. Like, when are you going to slow it down? When are you going to spin? When are you going to do this? Because of, like, the cadence in the song or how that works. But it's interesting because sometimes I'll have done drag for a time. Like, I'll have a month, right, like pre-COVID, where I'll have, like, 8 gigs in a month. Like, I'm twice a week, I'm out there, like, you know, shaking my thing or whatever. And then I'll be like, oh, I just want to go to a bar and dance. Because they're two different things. Like, when I'm up there and we're doing, you know, we're doing Mariah Carey's Heartbreaker. And I'm like, okay, this is and this is the first. Oh, we're on to the second chorus. Okay, we're getting a bit more into it. We're adding some more arms. Oh, wait a second. Jay-Z's coming in. I need to look for a hat. Because the bit is that I look for a hat in the audience. I take the hat. I put it over top my wig. I kind of cover up my face, but you can still see my mouth. I point at my mouth and I wrap the whole Jay-Z thing. Because I'm just, yeah, it's just bossy. And so there's more of, like, a calculation in terms of what you're trying to present and how that goes. Whereas, like, if I'm at a wedding and I'm giving you dance floor, I'm giving you great suit, I'm giving you, like, getting the girls going, like, I can pull out so many more moves, so many more things. One, because I'm in flats. And also because there's just so many more moves because you're not concerned about when you have to get to the right side of the stage to point at the person to put your finger to your ear to wave your hand around. Right?
Yeah.
So they're very sort of different things. I think I'm more in my head. I'm a bit more calculated when I'm in drag.
Calculated and timing things. As I wanted to say that maybe drag is a little bit more hospitable, like you're trying to host the audience and it's very much getting an audience to pay attention to particular moments and you're hosting that moment. And then maybe on the dance floor at the wedding or at the bar, it's really just getting people to move and it's more of an inner movement and you get to vibe with whatever is happening on your own pace and time.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Can you describe, maybe for you, is there any similarities or differences between musical theater and drag?
Oh, I think those are like one and the same.
Okay.
Like musical theater and drag, right? Because musical theater is exaggerated, it's camp, it's very sort of like whenever you go, like musical theater, you literally have to like make their lives believable that they would break out in song, right? Like you have to sort of make it this over the top thing. And for myself, at least, and I would speak to like my own drag, is that like that is what I do when I'm impersonating the female form. I'm over the top. It's larger than life. It's really big. It's exaggerated. So yeah, absolutely. Like the type of drag queen that I am is probably intrinsically tied to my upbringing in musical theater.
And with musical theater, it's more so you're given the script and then versus in drag, you're choosing your script maybe. You're choosing your song. You're choosing more of the atmosphere and the environment to move from versus musical theater.
Yeah, and that kind of goes to the idea that when I'm in drag, I'm the musical director, I'm the makeup artist, I'm the costume designer, I'm all of that. Whereas when you're in musical theater as a performer, right? If you're doing, like, I did a show early on when I was working as an actor at the O Canada A Dinner Theater, Niagara Falls, shout out, not sure if it's there anymore. And that was very like, here's your part, you're hobo number 3, you get rescued on Christmas, you know, this is what you do. And you just kind of do the script, right? You still bring yourself to it, but you're certainly bringing a lot more of yourself to drag because you get to create all of it.
All right, we're going to wrap up now. I can't believe this conversation has just happened in a snap. But before we go, I would love to know, are there any Is there anything you're listening to right now or you listen to today that like just you can't help but move to?
Oh, that is a good one. Okay. Vincent Higher is really good. Ooh. So Vincent, there's a part in the song that's like cat, cat, cow. And there's this, I don't know who it's featuring and I could do without that part, but Vincent is really something. He's just fantastic. He's queer. He's in LA. Really good. Also just to go mainstream, Hold On by Justin Bieber. Ooh. I probably already overplayed it. Like it's actually on its way out because I did, yeah, massive. I also really love to throw back in my car to raps that I teach myself. So the beginning of What's My Name by Rihanna featuring Drake, I know the whole Drake rap and I get really bossy in my car about it. And I know the whole thing, like every breath, I taught it to myself when I was working at the Shaw Festival. I had a half hour drive to work. And I know Take Care, which is Drake featuring Rihanna. Ah. I know the whole rap. And so, yeah. So either teach yourself the rap or Justin Bieber, Vincent for queer content.
Yes. I feel like all of those vibes are very summery as well. You can't help but just get the glow up. Amazing. Kyle, it's been such a pleasure being able to listen to you and connect with you today. Really appreciate your time and energy. Thank you.
It was so much fun. I really appreciate you having me on. It's always fun to spend time with Britta B. And fantastic. Thank you so much.
All right. That's it for today. You can find Kyle Miller online at Ms. Vanity a la Mode. That's Ms. with an MS, Vanity a la Mode. The D Word is produced by Dance Made in Canada, a contemporary dance festival featuring Canadian dance artists who possess unique artistic visions and come from all cultural backgrounds. This year, Dance Made in Canada presents Into Focus in partnership with Canadian Stage. Currently scheduled September 23rd through the 25th, at High Park's Amphitheater. Visit dancemadeincanada.ca to find out more about this year's festival and to donate. The D Word's creative producer is Grace Wellsmith, and the show is also produced by Sam Hale. Our editor and composer is Jamar Powell. Dance Made in Canada's co-festival directors are Janelle Rainville and Jeff Morris. Yvonne Ung is artistic director and also co-festival director. Thank you to Canadian Heritage, the Canada Festival for the Arts, Ontario Arts Council, and Toronto Arts Council for making the D Word possible. And I've been your host for today's session, aka your girl Britta B. The show is also hosted by Mingjia Chen, so be sure to check out all the other episodes we've got lined up for you. Find the D Word wherever you get your podcasts. Peace.